All right, well, it just got better. All right, council, please come to order. This is the November 21st session of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Novick, Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Okay, and we have two items, which I think you can read together.
Item 1110, consider the proposal of Forenza Development, Inc. et al. And the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval to change the comprehensive plan map designation from high-density single dwelling to attached residential and the zoning map designation from R5A to R2.5 for property located in the vicinity of Northeast 14th Avenue and Northeast Fremont Street, LU13-115-249-CPZC. Item 1111, amend the comprehensive plan map designation and change zoning of property at 3607, 3617, 3623, and 3637 Northeast 14th Avenue at the request of Peter Kuzik of Forenza Development, Inc., Kevin Palmer, and Don M. Meany, LU13115-249-CPZC.
Okay, Ms. Beaumont.
Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. I have several announcements I'm required to make by state law before we begin the hearing. These have to do with the kind of hearing we're having today, the order of testimony, and some guidelines for presenting evidence. First, this is an evidentiary hearing, which means you may submit new evidence to the council in support of your arguments. The council will be hearing testimony concerning the hearings officer's recommendation, and it will be heard in the following order. We'll begin with a staff report by BDS staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The applicant will go first and will have 10 minutes to address the council. After the applicant, the council will hear from individuals or organizations who support the applicant's proposal. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak. Next, the council will hear from persons or organizations who oppose the applicant's proposal, and each person again will have 3 minutes each. If there was testimony in opposition to the applicant's proposal, the applicant will have 5 additional minutes to rebut testimony given in opposition to the proposal. The council will then close the hearing and deliberate. The council has before you two items today. One is the hearings officer's report and recommendation, and the second is an ordinance to implement the hearings officer's report and recommendation if you accept it. The ordinance is a non-emergency ordinance. It needs to be carried over to second reading, and my recommendation is that you carry over the hearings officer's report as well so that you're voting on both items at the same time. So there will be no final decision-making today on those items. In terms of presenting testimony, any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record should be given to the council clerk after you testify. Similarly, the original or copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, or other videos or other items you show to the council during your testimony, including a PowerPoint presentation, should be given to the council clerk to make sure they become part of the record. Testimony must be addressed to the approval criteria, as must your arguments. If you believe that there are approval criteria that should be applied, that weren't applied, you should make that clear in your presentation. BDS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report to the council. Any issues you raise today must be raised clearly enough to give the council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you'll be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. And finally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow the council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. And that concludes the announcements I'm required to make.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone have any ex parte contacts or potential conflicts of interest to report?
I have none.
Hearing none, then I think we're ready to move to the staff report.
Sylvia, this is becoming a weekly ritual.
Yeah.
It is. But
flyer.
I have news for you. We set a record this year with 6 of these types of applications, and this is the last one for this year. So
the mayor set a record with the last time you were here. It was one of the shortest hearings we've ever had.
That's right.
We could shoot for that again today.
We're on a roll.
All right. Well, good afternoon. I'm Sylvia Kate. I'm the assigned planner for this review, and I'm here to explain to you the hearings officer's recommendation in this request. I also want to let you know that both Kurt Kruger and Fabio DeFreitas are here representing PBOT, and the applicant's traffic engineer, Mike Coleman of Kittleson and Associates, is also here. I bring that up because there is a small transportation policy issue, which I'll describe in my presentation. So if council has questions, you've got the experts here to answer them. The applicant is requesting a comprehensive plan map amendment and concurrent zone change amendment to change the current designation and zoning on this site from R5A to R2.5. The applicable approval criteria are listed. This application involves a request to rezone R5 residential lands to R2.5. There are specific goals and policies of the comp plan that the hearings officer gave weight to in analyzing the request. In his conclusion of his recommendation to you, he notes that otherwise all the policies and goals of the comp plan and meeting those are very straightforward. However, there are two policy issues regarding parking under Goal 6 that inherently have a conflict when applied to this particular situation. The first is Policy 6.26, and that essentially says preserve as much on-street parking as feasible in older neighborhoods. And this site is located in an older neighborhood. The very next policy, 6.27, says consider eliminating off-street parking in areas where there's high-quality transit available. In this situation, we're in an older neighborhood, very close to and very well served by transit, so these two policies have an inherent conflict in this situation. But the approval criteria seeks for, on balance, does the application support the comprehensive plan and policies? The hearings officer heard some testimony from four neighbors at the previous hearing. Concerns were raised very much about on-street parking availability, and you will see some pictures of those conditions during the day as I go forward. In short, the hearings officer determined that because these policies conflict, there needs to be a balance between them, and he recommends a condition of approval that future redevelopment of these properties will include off-site parking, so any redevelopment doesn't put additional pressure on on-street parking. But he's also recommending that when these properties are redeveloped, that there will be shared driveways in a very specific dimensional sequence, which will preserve as much curb length as feasible and therefore preserving as much on-street parking as possible given those anticipated future curb cuts. The alternative is not shared driveways, but multiple curb cuts, which would eliminate more on-street parking. You received a letter, I believe, yesterday from a citizen who testified at the hearings officer's level about these concerns. In her letter, she recommends a similar condition, that is to pair the driveways together to help ensure as much curb length as possible between them to preserve as much on-street parking as possible.
Could I ask you just to clarify, what are examples of off-site parking?
A garage or a driveway long enough that you can park your car.
Or off-street, you mean?
Yes, off-street, on-site.
I thought you said off-site.
I'm sorry, on-site.
On-site, off-street.
Off-street, okay. It sounded to me like we were talking about maybe a parking structure down the street.
Oh, I'm sorry, no.
Okay, thanks for the clarification.
Sure. Let's go on now. This map shows the existing zoning map, and you see the four lots of this application highlighted. And this zoning map shows the proposed new zoning in place. Just a quick tax map, again, to reiterate what the site is. The applicant has suggested that this is not an actual proposal, but this is an example of potential future development that could occur on each lot with an approval essentially attached housing. You see in this example that the garages are separated. I believe the applicant is very comfortable with the condition and will reconfigure their development to meet the condition about shared park driveways. The hearings officer has findings determining that on balance, the proposal remains supportive of the comprehensive plan goals and policies and meets all the other applicable approval criteria. So he is recommending approval with the one condition regarding the size and location of future curb cuts. We're now doing a virtual site visit in our virtual helicopter. This is obviously an aerial view. You see the site highlighted. Just to the east, you see a large commercial rooftop that is a small commercial center located at Northeast 15th and Fremont. It is anchored by Whole Foods Grocery. It includes a number of other shops, a local branch of Multnomah County Library, and the building has a second floor, which has 13 residential units on the second floor. And directly south of the site, you'll see there's CN1 zoning at Northeast 14th and Fremont. That's the second small node of commercial development and uses. We're looking north, up Northeast 14th from Fremont. You can start to see the backside of the commercial center on the right here, and you can see part of the CN1 commercial development to the left. This image is looking east along Northeast Beach Street, which is the more northerly street with the site having frontage. The site is behind the photographer, and you can see to the right the beginning of the loading dock for Whole Foods Grocery. This view is roughly mid-block on Northeast 14th Avenue. The subject site's to the left. The back of the commercial center is to the right. In the background, you can see trucks unloading goods for the grocery store right next to their loading dock because there were two trucks already occupying their loading dock. These pictures were taken midday and pretty much at the peak of the grocery receiving goods and deliveries. This view is looking south. You can see the corner lot has an existing house. It is the first of the four residential lots.
Can you go back to that picture for a sec? Does PBOT have an opinion as to parking on the sidewalk?
I'll defer to them.
So that's an existing house that is part of the subject property.
That is correct. And you can
see the corner lot.
Correct.
Okay.
And you can see just south of there that the next two lots are vacant.
Right.
Seriously, it looks like that truck is not only parked on the sidewalk, it's blocking a handicap access.
It's,
can we zero in on the license plate on that truck for a second?
I think it would be helpful to have PBOT come up and describe some of their findings when they we actually did multiple site visits because the amount of traffic midday caught everyone's attention, and in particular when notified neighbors brought to our attention they had concerns because there is so much activity during the daytime associated with the commercial center. Here you can see those two vacant lots, and then we're looking southwest. You can see the fourth lot there, and again, this is fairly typical of the on-street parking during midday. Fairly well parked up, but there were still available spaces on the street, even with that demand. Every site visit I did, and I believe that's also the case when PBOT went out. This concludes my presentation. If there are any questions, or if you'd like to call PBOT up to talk a little bit about their site visit and the loading zone and the recommended condition.
I guess I just have some more global concerns that maybe you and the applicant can address, and that is there were a couple of existing single-family houses on the portion of the site
that is
now
correct.
Shown as vacant. I guess they were demolished before those photos were taken or before
yes.
The application was filed. The house that you showed on the corner, I didn't do a site visit, but it looks like it's in pretty good condition. That's going to be demolished and replaced with one of the four row houses?
That is currently a dwelling for one of the applicants. I don't believe that lot is necessarily going to redevelop anytime soon. Obviously, the two vacant lots in the center of the site are shovel-ready at this point.
So maybe I should have reread that section before asking the question, but what's the policy argument for changing R5 to R2.5 in a situation like this? In other words, the fabric of the existing single-family neighborhood starts on that side of the street, mm-hmm. starts on the first block north of Fremont. So there's an existing single-family character to that neighborhood. This will change that to attached row house development.
Correct.
What's the public policy rationale for why here? And if here, what's to prevent us from spot rezoning very large swaths of the city?
Those are excellent questions. Let me just go back here a minute. First of all, because there is such quality transit in the area, that's very supportive of the additional density. Secondly, the developer actually met and worked with the Neighborhood Association before submitting the application, before even coming in for the pre-application conference. And the Sabin Neighborhood Association was very supportive and suggested to this rezoning. When the applicant came to us for the pre-app, we said, we understand the desire for R2.5, but we'd like to see the whole block face rather than just initially the two vacant lots were the original site. The developer understood what our goals were, got all the homeowners aligned, and came in with an application, and the most southern 5,000 square foot lot, that homeowner early in the process decided they didn't want to participate. So we've got that one lot hanging out. Otherwise, we would essentially have the full block face at R2.5. My zoning map doesn't quite go over. If we went over about half a block, you would see that there are large swaths of R2.5 very close to this area. So it is fairly consistent with the zoning pattern.
Which direction?
To the west. I believe your packet Let me check.
Map in our packet might go farther. Let's see.
I believe the zone, let's see if, yeah, our zoning map in the packet doesn't quite go far enough west to show that R2.5 zoning, but there's several blocks starting from Fremont going north.
So in answer to the mayor's question, you said that there's pretty good transportation there. So can we, okay, so we have obviously on Fremont and I think also on
15th.
You've got transportation, pretty good transportation. To what extent does the proximity to a grocery store and a little commercial hub like that influence our thinking?
Well, it's certainly in terms of location, everything's very walkable. That was one of the points that the Sabin Neighborhood Association raised in their three letters of support. They have been tracking this application very carefully through the process. And as it changed, for example, with the one homeowner dropping out, they reevaluated the application formally and still came to supporting it, submitted a second letter, and then recently submitted a third letter to City Council. They note in there that not only do we have frequent service transit here, but in the neighborhood, this location, there's open space nearby. There are very good pedestrian facilities throughout the neighborhood and some bike facilities throughout the neighborhood. So they felt that this made a lot of sense because it's so close to the node of commercial and to bump up a little bit the density, which would go from 4 to 8. Interestingly enough, the difference in actual development standards, aside from being able to have attached houses on this lot, all of the development standards are the same in terms of setback, every building coverage except for height. They get 5 feet additional height to accommodate the more narrow lot.
One of the conversations we've had historically in situations like this is what's the precedential effect? And I think the answer you've given us is these are all intensely fact-bound. They're based on the unique circumstances. So here, this location and all the factors that you've described. So we are sort of theoretically setting precedent, but the decision stands on a set of specific findings.
That is correct.
And so this does, just so I'm clear, because I think the mayor raised an interesting point, we're not giving wholesale license to doing this.
No.
Wherever there are unique
correct
qualities of this particular location that make it, plus you have the neighborhood being supportive.
Well, I'm still wary of this recommendation, though, because you could find those conditions in a very large portion of the east side neighborhoods of the city, or the west side neighborhoods, for that matter, you know, where access to transit and proximity to commercial development are both factors. So it's not a new issue for some of us, but I'm wary of I'm wary of where we're going here, so I need some more reassurance.
Well, at least we're actually doing it in a process rather than the skinny lots issue where it's happening all over everywhere just because of the historic lots.
Yes.
And it's R5 to 2.5. They're not asking for a 10-story building with highly intense development.
Well, it also, Commissioner Fritz, it also appears to be a design that is faithful to some of the aesthetics of the neighborhood. I mean, so
yeah.
Yes.
That strikes me as a difference. As I was listening to the presentation, I was also struck that while this is not a town center, what we're talking about is building some additional density around these commercial hubs. And we have, you know, I know what a town center is, but I also know that we're creating throughout our neighborhoods places where there's a grocery store and some other amenities.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to put density somewhere. It seems to me this is a preferred outcome than being in a traditional R5 neighborhood that is not anyway proximate to commercial services.
That's correct. And also, the development style, as Mayor Hales noted, is somewhat different. You're getting attached houses, but this is still considered a single dwelling zone. Even the development style is different from a single house on a 5,000 square foot lot, but it's still the comp plan considers it single dwelling zone still. It's not a multi-dwelling zone. So that and the location, the set of circumstances, I'm sympathetic with the mayor's concern that theoretically you could go throughout the city and find a very similar set of circumstances where transit's good, the pedestrian facilities are well developed, et cetera. But realistically, here we have someone who is interested in redevelopment, has worked very closely with the neighborhood association, with these homeowners, and with the city to get to this point. Whereas I don't think if we just picked another random site in the city that is similarly situated, more likely than not, we don't have someone who is in a position to actually request this and start the redevelopment process. So it seems like a very good example that our economy is not just green shoots, but we're getting tiny saplings now. And
why is it this is not, I guess, relevant to our decision, but why is it a vacant lot now?
The two interior lots did have houses on them. I suspect the applicant could speak more directly to this. But my examination of the records, by the time when I got out to the site visit, the demo had already occurred. But even from the aerial photographs, you could tell that neither of these homes were in particularly good repair, frankly. And just the condition of the lots, just from the aerial, I suspect the applicant, again, will can provide you details. But it was fairly evident that the structures there had not been maintained for some time, and there was, just from an aerial, you could tell they were not good, solid homes anymore.
All right. Thank you. Further questions for staff? All right. Sylvia, thank you. All right. We're ready for the applicant. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. My name is Bruce Vincent, Bedzell Vincent Consulting. I'm here representing Peter Cusick and Friends of Development and their request for the zone change. I will do my comments first, a brief summary of the my comments, and Mr. Cusick certainly will have comments of his own, and if you have any questions of Mr. Coleman's here, Mr. Cusick's here. This is Mr. Coleman from Kittleson Associates. If you have any transportation-related comments, he can address those to you. Now, we're before you today to seek approval of this comp plan amendment and zone map amendment. They request a change from R5A to R2.5 for these four lots that Sylvia referenced on the corner of 14th and...
Sir, could you just push that down a little bit?
Okay, is it booming?
The whole thing will move. No,
slide the whole thing down. Box your way.
Oh,
there you go.
That way it's in front
of
you.
I see.
Low tech, but
that
works.
Better?
There
okay. Yeah, I tend to kind of boom on these microphones. Sorry. Okay. The applicant and the applicant's rep have read the hearings officer's recommendation of approval and conditions of approval, and we concur with those proposed conditions. And we have submitted evidence in the file record demonstrating that all applicable Metro City Comprehensive Plan and Zone Map Amendment criteria, as referenced by staff and the hearings officer, and as outlined in the application narrative, been met. Planning staff and hearings officer have provided findings supporting a recommendation to improve this comp plan and zone map amendment request. In the file record, you have a response letters from Transportation, Environmental Services, Water Bureau, Fire Bureau, all stating they have no conflicts or objections. In addition, as Sylvia referenced, there's three letters from the Save Neighborhood Association in full support of this request, one from April and two from November this year. And what I'd like to do is just kind of briefly summarize the key points as I see it in our request. The subject site is appropriate for R2.5 zoning because it meets all the locational criteria for increased density adjacent to commercial nodes and transit streets. Surrounding and nearby lands are fully developed with a mix of commercial uses, single-family dwellings, multifamily dwellings, schools, and parks. Commercial uses on Northeast Fremont consist of retail and service-oriented businesses that support local residents and residents within the larger East Side region. lands that south that front northeast Fremont, as you saw on the map, is CN1. Those lots have a neighbor commercial uses such as a restaurant, pub, clothing store, barbershop, coffee shop. To the east is CN2 zoning. That's the large commercial development to the east, and that anchors Whole Foods. And other tenants include Starbucks, Papa Murphy's, UPS, and Backyard Bird Shop. And northeast Fremont is a transit access street that contains two bus stops within 500 feet of the ownership. And it's our opinion that everything that we described above is just an ideal spot for upzoning to R2.5. And, of course, traffic impact is a big portion of one of these, a comp plan amendment and zone change application. And in that regard, we have an enclosed traffic impact analysis by Kittleson Associates, and they demonstrate that all the proposed redevelopment and increased traffic resulting from this development will have a minimal impact on the functioning of the four key intersections surrounding the area. Kittleson concludes that all those intersections can and will operate at levels of service A, B, or C, which is good in transportation jargon. With regard to Plan Policy 6 and the TPR, transportation planning rule, Kittleson states that the existing transportation services can adequately serve the projected demand within the requested zone change area, and that the existing public transportation system facility is capable of supporting the uses allowed by the proposed R2.5 zoning now and 20 years from now. And with regard to the parking issue, Kittleson also concludes that the requested zone change will retain on-street parking supply that will exceed demand. And Kittleson recommended paired driveways to minimize impact to on-street parking. And when you do that, by doing that, you create a space to park cars in between those paired driveways that helps to mitigate the impact. The hearings officer, in fact, recommended a condition of approval to that effect, and, of course, we are accepting that condition. So in summary, we believe that the applicant's evidence in the case file, combined with findings and recommendation presented by staff and the hearings officer, demonstrate that on balance, and that's an operative term, especially concerning policy 6, that on balance, all applicable Metro City Comprehensive Plan and Zoning Code standards for a comp plan amendment, zone map amendment, have been met. Of course, we request approval. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Cusick for his comments.
Hello, my name is Peter Cusick, and I live at 7110 Southwest Old Wilsonville Road in Wilsonville, Oregon. Mayor and Council, let me give you just a brief history, and then there are a few questions that you brought up that I think I could answer here for you. When the two properties, 3607 and 3617, I'm building reproduction-type homes in the neighborhood, that one of the owners came to me and asked me if I was interested that both of them were considering to sell. And I do have pictures of the properties to show you the disrepair if you want me to bring those up.
Carl, grab them there. Okay. Thank you.
They were in quite a bit of disrepair. So the first thing I did was I went to the Sabin Neighborhood Association and met with them. And in that meeting, it was great. They saw what I saw, that there could be a need for some denser housing here because of the transportation that was there, because of the commercial area that was there. And they have continued to support it. Also at that meeting, what I learned is that they were the first Northeast neighborhood to ask for increased density in their charter. So Sabin has always been on record as supporting increased density. One of the things that they asked is that in the designs that I keep the designs that they had seen in the neighborhood before, that it sort of mirrors the feeling that was there of the homes in the designs that you've seen in the packet do have those elements of the Sabin neighborhood in there. They're going to be changed because of the driveway and the cars. But after our pre-application conference with staff, we realized that there were two issues, parking and transportation impacts, if we were going to reach concurrence on the goals and codes that we were facing. At that point, I hired Kittleson and Associates and froze the project till they came back with their analysis to show me that through their study that we would be able to speak favorably to these questions. That came back positively, and we went forward and here is where we are today. Mike's here. Mike Coleman from Kittleson is here if you have any specific questions, and I'm here for some questions that came up that hopefully I could answer for you.
So the two interior lots were obviously occupied by houses that were in very bad shape with a
yes.
Uncompleted home-built boat project in the backyard. As a boat owner, I can sympathize.
There appear to be two boats, Mayor. One on either side.
Yeah, that's... yeah. So you got to watch
post-hurricane or something.
Got to watch those boats.
Just
projects.
In case.
The house on the corner yes. to the north, which I guess is included in the subject application,
yes.
appears to be a much nicer single-family home in good condition, at least from a photograph. I can't tell you what the interior looks like, but tell me more about.
Let me tell you about that. The Don Meany, who is a co-applicant here, is the owner of that home.
Mm-hmm.
Her grandfather built that home and the homes next door, or the one home next door. She is currently using that as a rental, and like many homes in the area, that's been a long-term rental. My opinion as a home builder would be that she is going to have to do some major work on that home to bring it up to speed if she wants to do anything else going forward after these people leave. And I think that she is looking at this by getting the zoning that gives her the option of bringing this into possibly redevelopment or keeping it there. But the home, the photograph, that was the right day for the home to be shot for photo to be have displayed as far as the best it could look.
Mm-hmm. But the immediate action following this land use action is going to be you're going to construct those four row houses on the two interior lots, right?
Well, yes, I have to go through and get the yes, I'm moving in that direction. Yes, and then I've also acquired the home between those two from the Palmers.
I see. That's 3623.
23, correct.
Okay. Okay, I think I understand the situation better. So, great, thank you. Further questions, Mr. Cusick? Any questions about traffic? Kittleson's here. Okay, I guess we're squared away. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone here who wants to testify in favor of the application?
No one signed up.
And is there any?
I would like to testify, but you know what? I'm not against, and I'm not for. I do have something.
Okay, well, come on up. This would be a fine. Thank you. Just tell us your name and tell us what you have to say, please.
My name is Helen Sherman. I live at 3634 Northeast 13th. I live right behind the house on 14th and Bleak Beach. I live on 13th and Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea my community was going this way, but there's no children anymore. There's no place for children to play. I think we're running out of space. We being too compact. But that's my own personal view because I raised my children in that house. But since I don't see children anymore, so I guess they'll always change. But right now my concern is the house right behind me, the garage is on my property, I think. And that garage provides privacy for my space. And so I'm wondering, what is it or what's the plan to provide me or keep me with my privacy?
Okay, good question. Thank you.
And the traffic situation is horrible. All of, most, I'll say 75% of Whole Foods delivery come down Beach and usually turns on 13th. And so on top of that, before you had the hearing about the plans to rezone, you wouldn't believe how people brought their cars in, parked them, and left them for 3 or 4 days at a time. So, and then there, some of us feel like we're being harassed, and we don't like it. But you can't get these people to speak up, and I know exactly why, because my blood pressure is the same thing as theirs. To have these kind of going on in the community and the harassment doesn't feel good, and we are in no health. Our health is not in shape for us to be dealing with this stuff. But we don't want to move. You know, one lady had to build a fence to keep people out of her backyard. Same person all the time. Just come in and sit in her backyard like he owned it. So, you know, I had maggots a month ago. Now, I can't go out to dinner and come back home without having maggots delivered. So, see, there's a lot of things going on here. See, some of us have money and some don't. And I happen to be one of the many who doesn't have money. But I can appreciate, and I'm not jealous of people having money. You know, I just want to live. But I'm a little tired, and it's killing me also. This treatment, this harassment, because it's been going on for years. I'm a little tired of all these things that go on that we can do nothing about. And some neighbors have a little more sense than me, and you see they're not here. But I feel that I need to say something. And so if you go back in the records, when they rezoned Fremont, between 13 and 14 on Fremont, you'll notice in the records someone got up and said that those two houses had already been torn down. So you go back and check. Now, how I know that happened is I was there at that meeting and I left a statement. And we were being harassed then. So now I would assume and hope and pray that whomever the developers are, that they would get on a note of not trying to make Saban a whole white community. And the way they got what they got now is a disaster, and it's shameful. These are shameful things that had happened in this community. And you know what? It shows it. You can see it. They're closing schools. You know, our taxes go up, water bill go up, and everything goes up and we get treated bad. So, you know, we should get some kind of consideration, and someone needs to look after the people that's been there for years.
Thank you.
I pay my taxes too. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
And where and when will I get some answer on my privacy? On my property.
I think we might be able to get some answers right here, and that is what the development standards are for R2.5 where it comes up against R.5, so R5, so I will ask her that question.
I'd like to ask a favor. I would like for you guys to look after us, these old people, they my age. I'm 72, and I am crippled with arthritis. And some of us have heart conditions. So would you ask the harassers to just draw back?
Do our best. Thank you.
Thank you.
So is there anyone else that's signed up? Is that all in terms of?
That's all that's signed up.
No one signed up in opposition?
Correct.
Okay. So just a question there. I might ask you to respond. Are there particular development standards that apply to R2.5 that would have any effect on screening or buffering with adjacent uses, given that we're going to have R5 backing up to R2.5?
The development standards are exactly the same for both zones, with the exception that R2.5 allows 5 feet additional height for a structure, which is to make sure that you can get a home that meets building code requirements for ceiling heights and so forth on a 25-foot wide lot. But in terms of fences are allowed always between properties and single-family zones, and a fence up to 8 feet tall can be built. along the back property line that generally provides typical privacy levels for urban development.
What would you guesstimate is the current height if you went to the top of the roof of the garage that this woman has testified to, just roughly?
I'm going to guess.
Mr. Cusick wants to testify to, but just roughly.
I would say it's probably the way we measure height, 15 feet from the ground up to the midpoint.
But the structure that's allowed by code could go an extra 5 feet, so you're at least going to have the circumstance of someone on the third floor of this townhouse being able to look into the lot over whatever that structure is, look into someone else's lot.
That would be true. That's frankly true in any neighborhood where you have a mix of development where some homes are two or three stories versus a single story. That's one of those just natural things that can occur. You can look over, but
the current to the extent that it creates a current buffer, it's about 15 feet tall.
Correct. Correct.
But it looks like, and again, we may need Mr. Cusick to answer this question. It looks like the pre-existing garages that were on these lots were shoved all the way to the back of the lot, right?
That's correct.
So the new units that are built, what's the rear setback requirement on those?
Rear setback is 5 feet. With this type of development, you typically do have the garages pulled up closer to the front property line than, you know, a garage in the back. But that also results in a pretty fairly open backyard behind these homes. So there's, you know, a little bit of that backyard green space before the property line and then the next lot.
All right. Okay. That's what I was wondering. Mr. Cusick, anything you want to add to that discussion about site plan here? You may not know all those details at this point. This is a land use case, not a design review case, but okay, good. That might be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Cusick. Just speak to a couple of questions. One, the screening with the garage that's there, it's about an 8 foot high plate line. And then going up to a single pitch over that, but it's the mass that buffers, I think, is the benefit to her. All the homes that I'm doing, I'm planning to do at least six foot fences on the property line surrounding the homes. The general area of the home, there'll be a 20 foot parking area in front. The home, I believe, is 52 or 54 feet deep. I'm going to stagger them so that there's a little privacy, so you'd be at 56, so that's 76. From 100, I'd have 24 feet between the rear of the home and the property line. As far as looking back into the home, if I were doing a single-family home there and it was two stories or two stories with a garage under like these are going to be, it would be the same scenario with the back, you know, as far as the privacy, but the one thing we will have is that we will be farther off the property line. As Mayor Hales picked up from looking at the pictures, both of those, or the one home had a huge two-story garage right on the property line that was in huge disrepair. So all in all, there's going to be a lot more open space in that same amount of square footage because of the homes.
That helps. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cusick. So after the hearing, if you could share some of your diagrams with Ms. Sherwood, I think that would help her understand
what
you're
proposing.
Yes,
I'm trying to give her my phone number and things when I leave.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Okay, any further council discussion? Then I think we're open to making a tentative decision with findings to return, right, Catherine?
Yes, as to the hearings officer's recommendation, and then the ordinance would continue to second reading next week.
Okay. We have a motion on the hearings officer's recommendation.
I move adoption of the hearings officer's recommendation with the conditions specified.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, roll call on that.
Fritz.
This is another example of excellent staff work and a lot of work that's been done to get to this point, including with the Neighborhood Association, who was very diligent. When the proposal changed, they went back, reconsidered, and I think we'll be working with the neighbors, and I encourage you to bring the challenges with crime that you're experiencing to the Neighborhood Association, because they can perhaps help with the crime prevention staff through the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. But thank you for being here to testify, but thank you also to the developers. It's very helpful to have, in a zone change, a concept of what's going to actually be put on the lot, because that, I think, reflects Mayor Hales' concern, is this going to fit into the neighborhood? Because we know what it is that you're planning to do in this particular instance, that does seem to fit within the neighborhood. So I appreciate that very much. Aye.
Fish.
Mrs. Sherman, thank you for taking time to testify today. My house is 26 blocks east of your house. I'm raising my family as we speak. And some of the concerns you've raised, I want to echo what Commissioner Fritz said. And if there are additional concerns you have about being able to remain in your home and want to know about programs, I did hear something about rising water bills. Mayor Hales and I are working diligently to keep the increase in the future to the absolute minimum, but we also have additional programs that you may not be fully aware of. And if my office can be helpful, I'd like to introduce you to George Hocker before you go, and we'll get back to you on some of the concerns you've raised. Thanks for an excellent presentation, and I appreciate the developer being here and explaining also clearly his intention. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Infill is tricky, and we have a lot of work to do in the comp plan in the months ahead to try to strike the balance between preserving the integrity of our existing neighborhoods and adding density where it's appropriate. The fact that in this case the applicant did a good job of working with the Neighborhood Association and getting to yes is reassuring and sufficient for me to vote yes for this application. But frankly, that in and of itself is not enough for us to continue a long pattern of spot rezoning. So this one's okay. I think both the sensitivity of the applicant, the size and situation of the rezoning, and the fact that the neighborhood is in agreement is enough. But I'm wary of the bargain that we're striking as a city, wherein we insert little bits of additional density into otherwise intact single-family craftsman neighborhood that are irreplaceable in their architecture. So although I'm a fan of density, it has to be done right. This one was done right on a spot zone basis, but we're going to have to think much bigger and longer term here shortly when we take up the comp plan. So with that slight wandering from the subject at hand, I will vote aye. And then we will bring this ordinance back on second reading with this recommendation, right, next week? No reason.
Carla?
No reason to delay?
Correct. We'll hear that in the Wednesday morning session at 9:30.
Okay. So then item 1111 comes back next week. Thank you all. Thanks. And now we have